Good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Good morning, sir. We're here for your hearing for Mr. What is your name, sir?
Shelton. Donald Shelton.
Okay, sir. Who's going to be here?
I have.
Okay, the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis is going to conduct your hearing, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Shelton, of course, we know your name, but if you could state for the record your full name and your ADC number.
Donald Shelton, 057744.
Thank you, sir. Before we move forward, do we only have one representative for Mr. Shelton?
Two.
Will you both be speaking? Okay. There'll be a time when we'll ask you to come forward to speak. Okay, Mr. Shelton, you're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for 31412A parole hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. Although you cannot see us, we have a five-member clemency board panel. They are the Honorable Mr. David Neal, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright, the Honorable Ms. Dale Rittenhouse, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel chairman for this hearing.
Okay.
Good morning. I will begin the hearing with a summary. Mr. Donald Shelton is 49 years old. He was certified eligible by DOC for 31412A regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. The crimes of first-degree murder and kidnapping occurred on or about May 31st, 1985. He was approximately 16 years old at the time of the offenses. Is this correct, Mr. Shelton?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I'm
yes,
not sure that we have a good synopsis. On May 6, 1986, he was found guilty by jury trial. On April 8, 1986, he was sentenced to life for first-degree murder and 21 years for kidnapping, the second count, which has since expired. On January 25, 2013, Mr. Shelton was granted home arrest, and on October 23, 2014, he was granted general parole. On June 18, 2015, Mr. Shelton's parole was revoked, and he was charged with interfering with a monitoring device while on general parole. This added a 2.5-year prison sentence, which expired on August 21st, 2017. Once again, Mr. Shelton, does it still sound accurate?
Yes, yes, sir, I do.
I will try to read a summary of the offense, but we have a pretty detailed statement. It gets into a lot of twists and turns, but I'll at least begin with the beginning, and perhaps you can explain to the board the details in your own words. But according to the summary, on May 31st, 1985, the three co-defendants, Lopez, Schill, and Shelton, were drinking at a bar when the victim arrived, and a scuffle ensued, primarily between the victim and Schill and Lopez. After being struck in the face by Schill, the victim left and returned to his nearby residence. Approximately 1 hour later in the evening, the defendants walked to the victim's residence where they discussed plans to kill him. The defendant reports that as one subject arose, he and Schill became rather high-strung. They began to egg each other on. He also reported that the victim was afraid of them and was hiding outside the car. It appears that two of the defendants, if not all three of them, then participated in giving the victim a severe beating until he was completely defenseless. They loaded the victim into the trunk of the victim's car, and the defendant assisted in latching the trunk. All three got into the car. The co-defendant Schill drove them around town, at which time there was additional discussion about killing the victim, and this time they talked about cutting his penis, and I apologize if there's any young people. I think at this point, because we're talking about some pretty graphic violence, I will take into consideration that we have some young people in the hearing room. So for now, I'm going to continue with the just the general synopsis of the parole hearing, and that is according to Mr. Shelton's institutional progress report. He has considerable programming, provided a detailed parole packet. He has had moderate discipline in DOC from 1986 through to 2017, with his last major on February 1st, 2017 for disobeying a verbal order. This appears to be his 15th hearing before the board. He has letters of support from his family. Mr. Shelton, this is your first time before most of the members of this board. We'd like to get to know you, so in your words, can you tell us about the offense or offenses that resulted in your incarceration, sir?
Okay, you know, I couldn't hear you really well when you were reading the report about my crime. I was trying to hit the volume button on the phone, but I did hear enough of it to know why you didn't want to go into, you know, with the, you know, kids being present and everything. You know, I was a 16-year-old kid, and we were all drinking, and the three of us made a bad decision. And I don't want to use the word bad decision, but a horrendous decision, you know, life-altering, changing. You know, we were convinced by this victim's wife that, you know, he was beating her and her daughter, and, you know, and I don't even have an excuse, and, you know, I don't believe there is such a thing as an excuse for, you know, what happened. I was there when Shill and Lopez beat him to death, and I held the flashlight. You know, I didn't stop it, so I'm just as responsible as anybody else that was there. And, you know, I take full responsibility for what happened. And just like the other two guys, I'm sure. It's, you know, it's 33 years ago that this happened. And, you know, I'm not that same person that did something like that 33 years ago.
So there's a notation here in the pre-sentence investigation that, well, it says an anonymous individual called investigating officers and explained that he heard Shill and Shelton, I believe that's you, bragging about killing, or bragging about the killing, and gave officers the details of the murder just as he had heard them from Shill and Shelton. Of course, the victim's mutilated body was found. Autopsy reports indicate that he died from multiple blunt force injuries to the head and lacerations to some private areas. We're not here to retry the case, sir. This is a 31412 parole hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. But really, what I'm still a little lost as to what motivated this violent incident.
I don't really have an answer for what motivated the violence other than his wife, you know, convincing, you know, one of the co-defendants, which was Lopez, had impregnated his stepdaughter. And that's how I was introduced to this whole family, is through Mr. Lopez. And they had convinced him that he was getting drunk and beating both the pregnant girl and the wife. And, you know, with him believing that because she had told him all of this, you know, he convinced me and Shill both that that's what was going on. And with alcohol involved and, you know, teenage ignorance and everything else, I think that, you know, we were coerced into, you know, believing everything that lady had told him, and that's, in, you know, how it ended up happening.
Is that the way you explained it in the beginning?
No, in the beginning, I didn't explain it to anybody or to anything, you know, other than, you know, I didn't do it, you know. I was in, you know, I never took responsibility in the beginning of any of this, you know. It was, I didn't do it, I had no knowledge of it, and, you know, now I accept responsibility for my role in it. It's, you know, like I said, it's not somebody that I am today, for, you know, for certain.
You've been in the Department of Corrections for quite some time now, sir. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
How many years is that now?
Approximately 33.
How have you changed since you've been inside the correction system?
How have I changed?
Yes, sir.
Is that the question?
Yes.
Well, you know, I've become a man, you know. I've learned compassion, I've learned patience, I've learned respect. You know, I've written a book since I've been in here and had it published. I've learned, you know, I've taken educational classes, you know, not just from NDOC, but from out there. I've become a completely different person with a view that I want to be a member of society and somebody that's productive and that somebody has, that's normal. I don't want to be known as the 057744. I'd like to just be known as Donald Shelton. So I've changed in a lot of ways.
I know we have a large parole packet that you submitted, but you stated that you wrote a book. What did you write a book about, sir?
Well, it was a lesson book for homeschool kids from the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine. And it's part of a curriculum that's put out for homeschool kids. And what it is a lesson book for children that read books. You know, most of them are on historical literature, but a lot of them were on classic literature as well, like Robinson Crusoe or Swiss Family Robinson, Alice in Wonderland. I did a whole bunch of different lessons. They published approximately 75 of them. And, you know, so the kids will read the books. They'll answer the questions that I put together. You know, there'll be 25 multiple choice questions, 15 or 20 true or false, or with a vocabulary section. And it's all part of the Robinson homeschool curriculum. And, you know, it's based out of the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine. But it was a really, you know, it was an 8-year process that I spent writing this book. And, you know, I was paid for each lesson that they published. And it was a really, really, really cool experience that I was able to, you know, lucky enough to find myself into to get to do.
Thank you, sir. Again, I'm really aware that you have a detailed parole packet, but in your words, what are your plans should this board vote to grant you home arrest or general parole or even absolute discharge? What are your plans? Tell us in your words.
Well, I put in the parole packet that I would like to parole to California under general parole guidelines because my wife, you know, her job has been relocated from Arizona to California working for J.P. Hunt. And, you know, so they're in my parole packet. You see that we have the California parole guidelines in the handbook.
Yes, sir.
That we had, you know, gotten from out there. But, you know, I have a place to live. I have a car, you know, a vehicle. I, you know, have an OSHA 30 card, all the forklifts and, you know, 100-foot booms, you know, lift certificates, certifications. So, you know, I mean, I have the capabilities of finding a job. I have a really good support system. As you see, my wife and my stepdaughter are there at the hearing. And, you know, I plan on just going and starting my life and living a normal life and doing what I should do. Watching my grandkids grow up and, you know, being a part of everybody's life that I care about. You know, I just lost my dad a few weeks ago. And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I kicked myself in the butt because I'm not there to help my mother and, you know, be there for my family. But, I mean, I just want to go and do the right thing and be out there and be productive and be normal.
Sir, I got a couple more questions before I open it up to the board, and then we will talk to your supporters. But one is that in your discipline history in DOC, there seems to be some drug possession history. Now, this is early on, but were you using drugs during your...
In the beginning of my time, yes. But I haven't used drugs for at least 8 or 9 years, period, and nothing at all. You know, I did do some drugs in my younger days, yes, but not in a long time.
Well, we addicted to drugs inside the prison system, unfortunately.
I don't think I've ever been addicted to drugs, no. I think that I was more into smoking marijuana, maybe, and than anything else, but no, I've never been really addicted, no.
My last question is the panel chairman, at least for this stage of the full hearing, is that you were granted home arrest, correct?
Yes.
You were granted graduated to general parole, and then there's a revocation for interfering with a monitoring device. Now, it seems that you had been in the system for quite some time before this happened, before you were granted home arrest, graduated to general parole. What happened with the monitoring device? Because this is a concern.
Well, you know, I think that I lost my mind there for a minute. You know, I had the parole supervisor coming into my house and accusing me of doing some things that I had no part of in my own house. Don't get me wrong, I lost control of my house. There were guns in my house that were outside the safe, not in my living area, in my bedroom or in my bathroom, but in my father-in-law's room, who he had moved out from Texas and moved in with my wife and I and brought guns with him and had a safe in his bedroom where all of his guns were supposed to be kept. Well, you know, he was old, 70-something, and losing his faculties a little bit. I don't know if he accidentally didn't put them in the safe or what his reasoning was for not having them in the safe, but they were not in the safe. And Steve Butcher came in the house and found them outside the safe. And, you know, that led me to believe that I was getting violated. My parole was being violated because of something that was done that I had no control over. So I just panicked and I just lost my mind and I cut the monitor off and ran. You know, I didn't get far. I mean, I was arrested the same day, but I just really lost my mind. You know, I dealt with it in a way that I shouldn't have dealt with it. I should have dealt with it reasonably by sitting down with Steve Butcher and you know, but he made it seem like that I was doing a lot more than just that, you know, and I wasn't. You know, he was making it seem as though, and come to find out later, I understand why, because Steve Butcher and I have actually talked on the phone since I've been back, and I get his thinking, but, you know, he was making it sound like to me that I was responsible for something that I wasn't. You know, those guns being outside that safe was not my responsibility. Although it was my house, I should have been more on top of it. But I was trusting, and I thought that people around me had my best interest at heart, and obviously that wasn't the case. And it'll never happen again, because no matter where I go at now, I will make sure that everybody around me understands, look, you can get me sent back to prison by something as simple as not locking your gun up in your safe, you know, or whatever the case, leaving a marijuana pipe in my office that I didn't know about, because they found two marijuana pipes in my office that my stepson and his wife had left there. And they're making it seem like they're going to violate me for these things and bring me back to prison. And I just, my mind just, I don't know, I just lost my mind. And I just thought, well, I don't want to go back to prison for something I had never, you know, I haven't done. And, you know, I dealt with it in the wrong way.
Okay, sir, I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
So, Mr. Shelton, I'm trying to understand, and can you please help me with this, that in January of 2013, you were granted home arrest, sir, is that correct?
Yes, sir, I think so, yes.
Okay, and then in February of 2014, you had a revocation here, and you were revoked, at least you were picked up, and you were found in violation, but they continued on home arrest, is that correct?
What was the violation for, though, sir, because I don't remember Was it because there was a razor knife on my dresser, a tool from work? Or because there was something on those lines that happened about a tool that I had from work on my dresser?
No, this would have to do with violation of condition number, that was... One of them had to do with condition number 7, having a diluted urine.
Okay.
One of them had it. This is where you were actually revoked for actually testing positive for alcohol in 2014.
Right. Yes, it was for having, I had been drinking NyQuil, and I got tested. I had no idea that NyQuil had alcohol in it, sir. And that's what I went back to the board and they, you know, I explained to them, look, you know, I had been sick and I had drank not just NyQuil, but DayQuil because I was working during the day. And come to find out that stuff has more alcohol in it than actual beer or some of the mixed drinks, I guess. But that was what had happened at that point, yes.
Okay. And so then the board reinstated you back on home arrest and then... looks like in October of 2014, you were came back before the board to continue you on home arrest. Then in June of 15, you were revoked.
Right.
And that had to do with alcohol too, sir?
No, nothing to do with alcohol.
Okay.
No, that had to do with the home arrest monitor. That had to do with the monitor thing.
And what was the problem with the monitor, sir?
That was because that's what I came back for the 2.5 years for, was interference with the electronic monitoring device.
Okay. So, sir, you had the opportunity twice of being out. So why? What's going to make a difference this time, sir?
Well, this time I think that I have discovered exactly what my problems were, you know, what led up to me getting in this situation. And I realize now that there are programs that I can go to that I've looked into concerning PTSD and post-incarceration syndrome and not being so paranoid and worried about every little detail of the day that's going to violate me and send me back to prison. There's actual counseling for post-incarceration syndrome, and I have found places that I can go to and sit down with counselors. This time as well, my wife now has insurance from her job that I will be able to utilize and be able to sit down one-on-one with counselors as well and go to group counseling concerning post-incarceration syndrome and PTSD. You know, nobody wants to admit that 30 plus years in here does some damage to you. You know, they want to use the word institutionalization, and it's not necessarily institutionalized thinking that gets you in these situations. It's the actual damage that comes from spending 3 decades in here. So I recognize that. And I also recognize that who I can trust and who I can't trust and what I need to go about doing as far as securing myself in positions such as not having guns outside the safe in my own home that I don't know about. I'm not going to allow myself to be put in situations again to where I'm out of control of myself and what's important to my family and me. You know, my wife and I and the people that I care about. It's, you know, I know now how to slow down and appreciate what I have and not try to move so fast. And there's many things that I'm going to do differently this time, sir, that it's not going to result in this happening again.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further questions by fellow board members? Yes, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Mr. Shelton, somewhere I read also that in addition to removing the GPS device, you went out of state. Is that correct?
Excuse me?
I just read somewhere that in addition to removing the GPS device, that you possibly went out of state. Is that true?
Yes. I was in Gallup, New Mexico, yes.
And you didn't stay in contact with your parole officer about that then? You had no...
No, I didn't. That's what led to me getting the 2.5 years, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Any further questions from fellow board members? Okay, Mr. Shelton, you have some representatives in the room. I'd like to invite them to come to the podium if they want to share anything with the board.
Okay.
Are you coming one at a time?
No, we're both going to come up if that's okay.
Oh,
you can go.
Go ahead.
You can just have a seat.
You can. It's traditional that you speak one at a time, unless it's an interpreter type of situation.
Okay.
But if you can state your name and what would you like to share with the board today?
Okay. My name is Tiffany Rivales. I'm Donald's stepdaughter, Sherry's daughter. My experience with Donald, I went to their wedding. I actually married them. I was the officiant at their wedding. I've seen a lot of growth out of him. He has very limited real life experience, and I think that was a big problem as far as his missteps in gaining just being a full-fledged member of society. As far as the alcohol problem, like you said, a lot of people don't know that NyQuil has alcohol in it. So, you know, drinking alcohol and then being tested positive for alcohol is, you know, something that anybody could do. And his, like I said, his very limited life experience led him to trust people that he probably shouldn't have, such as, you know, my own brother. He probably shouldn't have trusted him. But as you can see, he's very articulate. He's very smart. He is not the typical... product of institution that we see. I've worked in corrections for at least 9 years. I'm a nurse in a correctional institution in California. And he's not typically what we see in corrections. He is very compassionate. He is very articulate. And my kids have been around him, and I trust him with my kids. If he is paroled to California, he would be with us and with our kids and under my mom's supervision and mine as well. And he would have our input for a lot of different things with counseling and with, you know, medical input. My mom doesn't take anything unless she asks me about it, and I'm sure that Donald would be the same. So that way he wouldn't violate anything. He wouldn't test positive for anything because nothing comes into my house unless it passes me first. As far as medication and stuff is concerned, so it's my hope that you guys would allow him the opportunity to try again, because, like I said, with the very limited life experience that he's had, any 18, 19 year old kid would get more than one chance, and he doesn't have any more life experience than the 18, 19 year old kid who moves out of his parents' house. So.
Thank you. I'll ask my fellow board members if they have any questions. Thank you. And thank you for your service.
Good morning. I'm Sherry Shelton. I'm Donald's wife. I do realize that there have been a few missteps with this. The first violation really was an accident. We were all sick. We had been sick for 3 weeks. And that never happened again. That was the only time that there was ever a problem, right up to even, and including the offense that he made with the monitoring device. Prior to that, I think that Friday or Thursday, he had gone to task and was tested. He was negative. When the parole officer came to our house and he found the stuff that was in my son's possession, he tested him then, and he was negative at that time as well. And when he had the rollover accident in Gallup, New Mexico, and was arrested there, he was tested there, and again was a negative for drugs or alcohol. So drugs or alcohol were not an issue here. The issue here with him was more of a fight or flight response. He panicked. He
he had this two-year plan. Everything was contingent on this two-year plan. With the, at the end of 2 years, he was going to be in a successful job, and everything was just going to be hunky-dory. And when he found out that life doesn't really work like that, it was a little bit hard for him to handle. And when the parole officer came in and he found the guns out of my dad's gun safe, and he found these other things that neither one of us had any knowledge of, he just saw all of these plans that he had flying out the window. And I think, you know, in addition to the fight or flight, he just felt defeated. It was like, this is how it's always going to be, and no matter what I do, I'm going to be violated. And so, yeah, I guess just why try? I really can't explain the thinking on that because I'm not in his head, but, you know, I don't think that he'll do anything like that again, because he already knows that's not going to get him the results that he's trying to get. But I know for me personally, I'm doing things a lot differently. At the time that all of this was going on, I was working over the road, because here in Arizona, I had gotten a local job, and it just didn't pay well enough for me to be able to support our household. So I ended up going back over the road. I don't know that actually contributed to what happened to Donnie, but I know that it didn't help, because I wasn't here to lend support. You know, there's only so much support you can lend over the phone. And since then, I have been able to get a good local job. I was recruited by J.B. Hunt to work for them in their intermodal division. So I leave for work every morning at 6:30, and I'm home every night between 6:30 and 7 o'clock. I've been able to be more active around the house and doing things I need to do. I have 2 days off every week, and I also have, they don't do your traditional time off where you have to work there for a year before you get paid time off. Like right now, I'm being paid for time off, because you earn your time off weekly as you go, and you can use it whenever you need to. So whatever issues he would have, if I needed to take time off and go with him, it wouldn't be a financial strain. And, you know, things are just better as far as me and what support I can really lend, you know, and taking a lot of pressure off of him in that aspect. And for those reasons, I think that makes a lot of difference. And I think, you know, this time in too, he also learned a lot, because he did lose his dad, and he wasn't able to be there to spend any more time with him. And that's something he's going to have to live with. He's going to have to regret that. And his mother is ill as well.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's a question I'd like to ask you, not Mr. Shelton. And that was the business of the exposed farms in the residence?
Yes.
How did this happen again? Someone moved into the house with a gun safe?
My father was living with us, and he had brought a bunch of guns with him from Texas that had belonged to my grandfather, and they were in a gun safe in his room. It was our understanding with him, and he had been told repeated times that these guns could not be taken out of the gun safe. Mr. Butcher, and also Donnie's prior parole officer, what's her name, Frisconi, they were well acquainted with my dad. They'd come in and sit and talk with him all the time. And when this whole thing happened, I talked to Mr. Butcher after the fact, after Donnie was arrested. He called me, and we had a long discussion about this, and he told me that at that point he was not going to violate Donnie on the firearm, simply because he already knew that they belonged to my dad, because he'd already seen them before, and he was going to talk to me about possibly getting rid of the firearms, because he didn't feel like my dad was mentally competent, that he was doing things that he shouldn't be doing. And I went home, and I got rid of the guns immediately. And as it is now, my dad doesn't even live with us anymore, so that's not even an issue. But the guns were gotten rid of pretty much immediately.
1 second. And then I'll turn it over to Ms. Rittenhouse. I do want to say this, because I don't know you personally. You certainly sound like well-adjusted people, and I didn't want to bypass parole or what they had to say, but I'm glad you added that information, because what I was wondering was, it sounds like a pretty, like you said, a fight or flight moment for him over something that might have been rectified with his parole officer if he hadn't panicked?
Well, from what I understood, when Mr. Butcher came and he was doing the investigation, the searching in the house and all of that, there was also other parole officers there that, I guess, because they bring them all in, you know, several at a time. And I guess a couple of these other parole officers were having a conversation amongst themselves, separate from Mr. Butcher. And what they were saying amongst themselves was that, well, they're just going to violate him on Monday anyway. I don't know why we just don't take him in now. Donnie thought they were talking about him. Mr. Butcher says they were talking about someone else. And I asked Mr. Butcher, well, you guys might need to talk to these people and maybe do some extra training because they should be having these conversations right there.
I don't want to stray from, like, I don't know what happened amongst the parole officers. I'm just trying to put it together as a board member in context. It's a cautionary tale for Mr. Shelton because it seems like with cooperation between him and his parole officer, things might have been different. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Rittenhouse. Thank you.
I just had a question. I'm reading this warrant from that time, and it said there was also alcohol found in the house and then the marijuana pipes. So I guess that would be something else to consider, that those things really can't be.
There were four beers inside of the refrigerator. I had talked to his parole officer several times and asked them, you know, because we do have barbecues at our house from time to time. I come home from work, and especially during the summer, I might like to have a beer after work. I'm not on parole, and I'm well over 21, so a beer after work before a shower, you know, I mean, that's not illegal for me.
Right, right.
And I had asked him several times if this is going to be an issue, because if it was, it just wouldn't happen. His own sister in their house where he was first paroled, they had a full bar in their living room, and it was never an issue because he was never, I mean, he had full access to it,
right,
of course, but he was never under the influence of alcohol. He wasn't drinking. He knew that he couldn't drink. And I'm not much of a drinker myself. I mean, once in a great while I might drink, and even then it's not to excess. So
that's a question. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Any questions? Are you both finished with your statements?
I think so.
I know I kind of interrupted, so
no, it's okay. I was just really trying to express to you, you know, not only has Donnie had a chance to reflect, and we've talked about the fact that he should have handled this differently, because he even knows that even if they would have violated him on Monday, we could have gone in, and since Mr. Butcher was very familiar with the family, familiar with everybody that was there, we wouldn't be here 2.5 years later. This would have been resolved a long time ago. But I don't think at the time, I don't think Donnie really rationalized that part of it. You know, it was just a panic. And, you know, like I said, I'm doing things a lot differently too. So not only has he reorganized his thinking, I've reorganized mine, as well as my life, my career choices, and, you know, making myself more available to, you know, bend the required support.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank both of you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Shelton, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you'd like to make to the board? Really ask that you don't repeat yourself in the interest of time management, but this is your hearing. So is there anything else that you would like to share with the board, sir?
Yes, I have a short statement that I wrote that I'd like to read, and then I will just end it with that.
Thank you, sir.
As I've stated, I'm asking you to parole me to general parole so I can transfer to California and be with my wife. I have all of the resources there and believe I will succeed in life no matter what conditions that must meet. However, if the board feels that home arrest is the best option, I have made arrangements for that. My sister, who is an elementary school principal, will allow me to live at her residence. My nephew will hire me at the company he works for, and I can stay there in Maricopa County until the board feels general parole is best. As I've stated, no matter where I'm living, my main focus will be on success and living up to the conditions that must be met and never come back to prison. I can't express enough about how rushed I was before, or at least how my own expectations were rushed. I plan on slowing down and living every day with a realistic approach to readjusting to a normal life. Nobody put more pressure on me than I did, and realizing that gives me an understanding to what I need to do this time around. I wish I could say with absolute certainty that I figured it all out, but nobody can. I can say, however, that I won't make the same mistakes again, and I won't ever be afraid to ask for help when I'm feeling overwhelmed. I realize now that there are people who understand someone in my shoes, and I don't feel so unique when it comes to being a little behind in life. And I also realize how lucky I am that my support system is so strong. I haven't forgotten what got me where I'm at today and why we're here. No words can describe the emotions I feel or the sorrow I have towards all the people I've negatively touched, especially towards Mr. Collins and his family. I'm not that same irresponsible teenager today that participated in such a horrendous crime 33 years ago. I will never do such a thing again. Please believe that. Thank you for your time and consideration, and please allow me another chance to move forward with my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shelton. The board is going into discussion now. It may sound like we're speaking with you, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself before we come to our decision regarding whether to grant regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. So if you'll just remain on the phone, we ask that you remain quiet. The board will be in discussion, and we will come back to you shortly with the decision. Okay, sir?
Thank you.
Thank you. The board is now in the discussion. Fellow board members, this is probably a good time as one board member to remind myself that I walk a fine line between public safety and compassion. I'd say that's probably true for everybody on the board. So I'll begin by that reminder that there was a victim in a terrible violent crime. This happened many years ago. There was a long period of incarceration in between. Mr. Shelton certainly sounds like an intelligent individual, and he has the support of his family. The problem I'm having right now, and this is certainly not the last word, is this business of him absconding after interfering with a monitoring device. I recognize there was an additional charge attached to that. That charge has since been, he served that sentence. That charge expired on August 21st, 2017. But this is where I arrived, and that was pretty fresh. He finished that prison sentence almost weeks ago, if you want to get technical. And I certainly hope that he learned something from his experience outside of the prison system. But I have that concern about that panic and fleeing response that he had that I think might have been able to have been negotiated, I can't guarantee that, between Mr. Shelton and parole. And that's where I'd like to begin the discussion, because I am, I dare say I'm a little bit on the fence on this one. But I'm certainly open to the input of my peers. Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Mr. Quinones, I'm a little on the fence too. I appreciate very much what someone said. I can't remember who exactly, that he has a 2-year plan. And so he sounds like somebody who's very organized in his mind and very goal-driven. And anybody who could write and stick with this, the children's literature lessons that he wrote, that's very impressive. But I'm a little bit confused about the materials that we have the home, his wife's home being in here in Arizona in Buckeye, but then there have been references to California, and we don't have the authority to grant parole to California. And we could grant parole here. That would be up to the Department of Corrections to do the California thing. So, I'm also troubled by the previous absconding and going off to New Mexico. So also on the fence, probably not helping matters by remaining on the fence, but there I am. So.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Again, as I've said many times, and I will many times more, that is the important piece for me of the discussion. We look at it from different filters, but I'm certainly open to the yes, Mr. Johnson.
I am concerned about the about the fact that he was. He did get his feet on the board. He actually had two shots at it. And still wind up being revoked. He, 2013, when he was granted home arrest, and then he had a violation in 14, February of 14, and the board continued to have him on parole, and then he came back to the board to see how he was doing in October of 14, and they continued him on home arrest, and then in 2015, he was revoked. And you know, I just, you know, this, I just have a little bit of issues with understanding why he got himself in trouble and with the monitor and revoked, but he knew the seriousness of it. I'm gonna assume that in 14, when he was found in violation and continued on home arrest, that usually that means he was arrested and incarcerated for some period of time. I'm not sure if he was incarcerated when he came back for the board, but generally, you know, they get arrested and then they come back for the board and they continue on his home arrest. So he certainly understood the seriousness of it. I'm not quite understanding and didn't really get a good explanation, at least that I heard, of what happened with the monitor system and why he was actually revoked. So at this point in time, I'm not in favor of home arrest or absolute parole or regular parole, absolute discharge.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further input from fellow board members? Yes, Dr. Ray.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to be very brief on my comments on this one. I feel for the family. I feel for the family that's here. And in fact, I do feel for Mr. Sheldon himself. But he created the situation himself. And I'm just repeating what's already been said. And that is he absconded and he departed the state of Arizona. And as one board member, I just cannot condone that. That's why I'm not in favor, sir.
Thank you, Doctor. Before I make a motion, I do want to say, because it is an ongoing issue, I believe that we've had the opportunity to hear this science and the theorizing about underdeveloped immature people in the prison system. And I will say that we're talking about an individual that was 16 years old at the time of the offense. I recognize that Mr. Shelton had to grow up inside the prison system, that there are maturity issues, that there are trauma issues. There are a lot of things that happened in this story that, or in this case, that I have empathy for, but unfortunately, as my colleague, Mr. Johnson stated, he was technically given more than one opportunity. And he had a profound panic and absconded and left the state. So I do not feel comfortable in granting regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest at this point, but this is a process. This is certainly not the last parole hearing for Mr. Shelton. So I will simply say that I am going to make a motion not to grant regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest for Mr. Shelton, ADC number 57744. And then I will read the decree. Would you prefer that I read the conditions first? I mean, I'm sorry, the reasons first.
No, let's go ahead and make the motion.
Okay, second. I deny. Second by Chairman Wright.
Agree.
And my reasons are as follows. Serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, looks like, I'm not mistaken, you had a history of substance abuse inside the prison system, correct? Okay, he's very young. You have recent... One second. You have recent disciplinary history. He does have a good release plan. He gave good demeanor. Got good family support. So is there anything in the other category that anyone would like to add? And those are my reasons. So we're getting close to closing this hearing, Mr. Shelton. We've denied regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. We stated our reasons. Do you have any questions?
No, sir. I'd just like to know when I will come back and see you guys again.
I did not ask for a parole set off. So approximately 6 months, Mr. Shelton.
Can I ask one more question if you guys don't mind? Is there anything, you know, the simple facts that what you guys stated will be the same 6 months from now? Is there anything possibly that you guys might think that I could do that would change the situation in your view, you know, something that I can come forward with that would make you guys know that I'm not going to make that mistake again?
Well, Mr. Shelton, I think certainly in my summary I said some things that were in the open. This is an open meeting hearing, but we're all individual voting members. We don't discuss the cases. Again, I mean, there's a big integrity issue with the board about not discussing the cases before we come into the next hearing. All I can say is that the board will take everything into consideration during the next hearing. Chairman White, is there something I'm missing here in the...
There's nothing else that we can say.
Yeah, there's nothing else we can say.
Just go to the board and give it your best.
Okay, thank you. You guys have a good day.
Thank you, sir. This ends the hearing.
And the board.